We present The Elephant Man by Bernard Pomerantz, starring Gerard Murphy as John Merrick, Jeremy Clyde as Frederick Treves, Anna Massey as Mrs. Kendall, and Charles Kay as Targom. The London Hospital in the city's East End, 1884.
Mr. Targom,
Frederick
Treves, your new lecturer in anatomy.
Age 31, books on scrofula and applied surgical anatomy. I'm happy to see you rising, Mr. Treves. Sit down. Yes, I like to see merit credited. And your industry, accomplishment and skill all do you credit. Now, ignore the squalor of Whitechapel, the general dinginess, neglect and poverty without, and you'll find a continual medical richesse in the London Hospital. We study and treat the widest range of diseases and disorders, and are certainly the greatest institution of our kind in the world. The Empire provides unparalleled opportunities for our studies, as places cruel to life are the most revealing scientifically. Add to our reputation by going further, and that'll satisfy. You've bought a house?
On Wimpole Street.
Good. Keep at it, Treves. You'll be a fellow of the Royal Society with 100 guinea fees before you're 40. You'll find it an excellent consolation prize.
Consolation? I don't know what you mean.
I know you don't. You will.
A happy childhood in Dorset. A scientist in an age of science. In an English age, an Englishman. A teacher and a doctor at the London Hospital. 2 books published by my 31st year. A house. A wife who loves me. And, my God, 100 guinea fees before I'm 40. A consolation for what? As of the year A.D. 1884, I, Freddie Treves, have excessive blessings. Oh, so it seems to me.
Step in and see. Cuthbert Chowley, step in and see. This side of the grave, John Merrick has no expectation of hope or relief. In every sense, his situation is desperate. His physical agony is exceeded only by his mental anguish, a despised creature without consolation. Cuthbert Chowley, step in and see. To live with his physical hideousness, incapacitating deformities, and unremitting pain is trial enough. But to be exposed to the cruelly lacerating expressions of horror and disgust by all who behold him is even more difficult to bear. Cuthbert Chowley, step in and see. For in order to survive, Merrick forces himself to suffer these humiliations. I repeat, humiliations. Thus, he exposes himself to crowds who pay to gape and yawp at this freak of nature. Half elephant, half man, the Elephant Man. Here you are, sir. See Mother Nature uncorseted and in malignant rage. Elephants.
Half elephant, half man is not possible. Is he foreign?
Right, from Leicester. But nothing to fear.
I'm at the hospital across the road. I'd be curious to see him if there is some genuine disorder. If he's a mass of papier-mâché and paint, however...
Then pay me nothing. Enter, sir. Merrick, stand up. You bloody donkey, up, up!
I I must examine him further at the hospital. Here is my card. I'm Treves. I will have a cab pick him up and return him. My card will gain him admittance.
5 bob is yours for the day.
I wish to examine him in the interests of science, you see.
Sir, I'm Ross. I look out for him. Get him into living. Found him in Leicester Workhouse. His own ma put him there at the age of 3. Couldn't bear the sight. Well, you can see why. We, he and I, are in business. Here's our capital, see? Go to a bank, go anywhere. Want to borrow capital? You pay interest. Scientists, even. Well, it's good value, though. But you won't find another like him.
Fair enough.
Right. Howdy, Merrick! That bloody dog's it out!
The most striking feature about him was his enormous head. Its circumference was about that of a man's waist. From the brow, there projected a huge bony mass like a loaf, while from the back of his head hung a bag of spongy, fungus-looking skin, the surface of which was comparable to brown cauliflower. On the top of the skull were a few long, lank hairs. The osseous growth on the forehead, at this stage about the size of a tangerine, almost occluded or closed one eye. From the upper jaw, there projected another mass of bone. It protruded from the mouth like a pink stump, turning the upper lip inside out and making the mouth a wide, slobbering aperture. The nose was merely a lump of flesh, only recognizable as a nose from its position. The deformities rendered the face utterly incapable of the expression of any emotion whatsoever. The back was horrible because from it hung, as far down as the middle of the thigh, huge, sack-like masses of flesh covered by the same loathsome cauliflower stain. The right arm was of enormous size and shapeless. It suggested, but was not, elephantiasis, and was overgrown also with pendant masses of the same cauliflower-like skin. The right hand was large and clumsy, a fin or paddle rather than a hand. No distinction existed between the palm and back. The thumb was like a radish, the fingers like thick, tuberous roots. As a limb, it was useless. Now, the other arm was remarkable by contrast. It was not only normal, but was, moreover, a delicately shaped limb, covered with a fine skin and provided with a beautiful hand which any woman might have envied. From the chest hung a bag of the same repulsive flesh. It was like a dewlap suspended from the neck of a lizard. Now, the lower limbs had the characters of the deformed arm. They were unwieldy, dropsical-looking, and grossly misshapen. There arose from the fungus skin growths a very sickening stench, which was hard to tolerate. To add a further burden to his trouble, the wretched man, when a boy, developed hip disease, which left him permanently lame so that he could only walk with a stick. And Mr. Merrick, would you walk for us? He was thus denied all means of escape from his tormentors.
Mr. Tree.
Yes.
You have shown a profound and unknown disorder to us. You have said when he leaves here, he's for his exhibition again. I do not think it ought to be permitted.
Yeah,
yeah. It is a disgrace. It is a pity and a disgrace. It is an indecency, in fact. Well, it may be a danger in ways we do not know. Something ought to be done about it.
Yes. I am a doctor. What would you have me do?
Well, I know what to do. I know.
Come on! Out of there! We got to earn a living somehow, don't we?
Not like this, you don't.
Come on! Move! Don't hit him!
Now,
things.
Your attention, please. Every freak in Brussels Fair is doing something to celebrate Leopold's fifth year as King of the Congo.
Oh.
Our king, our empire.
Now,
don't sing yet, you morons. I'll say when, and when you do, get it right. You don't. It's back to the asylum. You know what that means, don't you? They'll cut your heads. They'll spoon out your little brains. Replace them in the guts on they were nipped from. Fire! Yeah. Now, I'll be back with Castellan.
Bouncy, Queen of the Congo!
Cosmos? Cosmos?
Congo! Land of darkness. Oh, look at them, lad. It's clear on the continent. Loads of indecency here. No one minds. You won't get copper sent round to Rouseware like London. Reckon in Brussels here's our fortune. Now, you have a little taser tape with this lot. Well, I see the coppers about our license to exhibit. I'll be right back.
I come from England. At home, they chased us out of London. Police, someone complained. They beat me. You have no trouble, no?
Hello?
Hello? In Belgium, we make money. I look forward to it. Happiness, I mean. You pay your police? How is it done?
Hello?
We do a show together sometime. Yes? I have saved £48, 2 shillings, 9 pence English money. Ross takes care of it. Little vocabulary problem. Poor things. Looks like they put your noses to the grindstone and forgot to take them away.
They're not ready yet.
Please. Now get those words right, girls, or you know what.
Don't cry. You're so nicely. Don't cry.
I was promised a permit. I lined up a tour on that.
This is a brutal, indecent, and immoral display. It is a public indecency. It is forbidden.
And what about them with their perfect tone heads?
They are ours.
Competition's good for business. Where's your spirit of competition?
Don't
tell him. You're better off dead, indecent bastard.
Ostend will always mean bad memories. Won't it, Ross?
I decided. I'm sending you back, lad. You're a flop. No, you're a liability. You ain't the moneymaker I figured. So that's it.
Alone?
Get out of you, Bob. That's some grub. I'm keeping the rest. Put me in trouble. I deserve it, I reckon. Invested in nothing, you. Pick up your stink if I stick around. Stink of failure. Stink of lost years. Just stink. 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 This is a woman. Let's see him to Liverpool Street Station, will you? Here's the trouble. What's he doing? I just make sounds, fellas, an imbecile. Bon voyage, Johnny. His name is Johnny. He knows his name, but that's all,
though.
Don't follow him, Johnny.
Johnny.
I'm on boat now. Conductor. Johnny.
Safe in here, I've barred the door.
Everyone is a ribbon to pieces. I've never seen anything like it. It's like being Gordon at Blinking Cartoon.
Got somewhere to go in London, lad, have you? You can't stay here.
He's an imbecile. He doesn't understand. Search him.
You got any money?
Robbed.
What's that? He just makes sounds. Frightened sounds is all he makes. Go through his coat.
Jesus.
Look out. Don't let me go through your coat and I'll turn you over to that lot. No, I was only joking. Don't upset yourself.
Croak,
yes. Oh, what have we got here? A card, is it? Ah, you Johnny Mick? What is this old card then, Johnny? Someone give you this card.
What's it say?
It says, Mr. Frederick Treves, Lecturer in Anatomy, the London Hospital.
I'll go and see if I can find it. It's not far.
What's he do then, Johnny? This Treves bloke, does he lecture you on your anatomy? People who think right don't look like that then, do they? Glung, 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 yeah. Sure, that's it. Treves.
What is going on here? Look at that, Bob. Have you no sense of decency? I am Frederick Treves, and this is my card.
This poor wretch here had it, sir. Right from Ostend.
Good Lord. Merrick. John Merrick. What has happened to you?
Help me.
You are Miss Sandwich.
Sandwich, yes, Mr. Treves.
And you've had experience in missionary hospitals in the Niger.
And Ceylon.
I may assume you've seen...
The tropics. Oh, those diseases. The many and the awful scourges our Lord sends. Yes, sir.
I need the help of an experienced nurse, you see.
Well, someone to bring him food, take care of the room, yes. I understand. But it is somehow difficult.
Well, I have been let down so far. He really is, well, that is the regular sisters. Well, it's not part of their job, and they will not do it. Be ordinarily kind to Mr. Merrick. Without, well, panicking. He is quite beyond ugly. You understand that? His appearance has terrified
me. Oh, the photographs show a terrible disease.
It is a disorder, not a disease. It is in no way contagious, although we don't in fact know what it is. I have found, however, that there is a deep superstition in those I've tried. They actually believe he somehow brought it on himself, this thing, and of course it's not that at all.
I am not one who believes it is ourselves who attain grace or bring chastisement to us, sir.
Miss Sandwich, I am hoping not.
Let me put your mind to rest. Care for lepers in the East, and you have cared, Mr. Treves. In Africa, I have seen terrible scourges, quite unknown to our more civilized climes. What at home could be worse than a miserable and afflicted, rotting native?
I imagine.
Appearances do not daunt me.
It is really that has sent me outside the confines of the London seeking help.
I look unto the hills whence cometh my help. I understand. I think I will be satisfactory.
Ah, here's lunch, Mr. Treves.
Thank you, Porter.
Right, sir.
Well, Perhaps you would be so kind as to accompany me this time, Miss Sandwich.
I will introduce you.
Allow me to carry the tray.
Thank you, but I will take it this time. You are ready?
I am.
He is bathing to be rid of his odor. John, this is Miss Sandwich. She is coming
here. I'll tell you. Oh,
good God in heaven.
I'm sorry, John. I really thought I...
Thank you for saving the lunch this time.
Excuse me.
You've let me down, you know. I did everything to warn you, and still you let me down.
Oh, you didn't say this. You didn't. You just said words.
But the photographs.
Pictures. No one will do this. I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, this is not helping him.
Again very soon. Goodbye, John.
Goodbye. The Lord is my shepherd.
With what fortitude he bears his cross. It is remarkable, Mr. Treves. He has made the acquaintance of religion and knows sections of the Bible by heart.
Really?
Once I grasped his speech, it became clear he'd certainly had religious instruction at one time.
I believe it was in the workhouse, my Lord Bishop.
They are awfully good about that sometimes. The Psalms he loves. The book of Job perplexes him, he says, for he cannot see that a just God must cause suffering, as he puts it, merely then to be merciful. Yet that Christ will save him, he does not doubt. So he is not resentful.
Christ had better be damned if we can.
In any case, Mr. Treves, he has a religious nature. Further instruction would uplift him, and I would be pleased to provide it. I plan to speak of him from the pulpit this week.
I see our visiting bather has flushed the busy bishop from his cruciform lair.
Speak with Merrick, Mr. Gong. I have spoken to him of mercy and justice. There's a true Christian in the rough.
Well, that makes my news seem banal, yet, yes. Frederick, the response to my letter to the Times has been staggering. The English public has been so generous that Merrick may be supported for life without a penny spent from hospital funds.
Oh, that is excellent.
God bless the English public.
Especially for not dismembering him at Liverpool Street Station. Ready. The London's no home for incurables. This is quite irregular, but for you, I permit it. Though God knows what you'll do.
God does know, sir. And Darwin does not.
He'd better, sir. He deformed him.
I had apprehensions coming here. I find it most fortunate Merrick is in the hands of Mr. Treves, a Christian, sir.
Freddy is a good man and a brilliant doctor, and that is fortunate indeed.
Well, I couldn't have raised the funds, though, my lord.
Don't let me keep you longer from your duties, Mr. Treves. Yet, Mr. Gom, consider... Is it science, sir, that motivates us when we transport English rule of law to India or Ireland? When good British churchmen leave hearth and home for missionary hardship in Africa? Is it science that bears them away? Sir, it is not. It is Christian duty. It is the obligation to bring our light and benefices to benighted man. That motivates us, even as it motivates Treves towards Merrick, sir, to bring salvation where none is. Gordon was a Christian, sir, and died at Khartoum for it. Not for science, sir.
Certainly not for science.
Mr. Treves, I'll visit Merrick weekly, if I may.
You will be welcome, sir, I'm certain.
Then, good day, sir.
Good day. Well, Jesus, my boy. Now we have the money. What do you plan for Merrick?
Normality, as far as is possible.
So he will be like us?
There is something wrong, Mr. Gom, with us.
How long as I like?
You may stay for life. The funds exist.
I've been reading this about homes for the blind. Wouldn't mind going to one when I have to move.
But you do not have to move, and you're not blind.
I would prefer it when no one stared at me.
No one will bother you here, Mr. Merrick.
Certainly not. I've given instructions.
There. What did I tell you?
God almighty. Mr. Gold.
You were told not to do this. I don't understand. You must not lurk about. Now, surely you have work.
Yes, sir.
Well, it is infuriating. When you are told a thing, you must listen. I won't have you gaping in on my patients. Now, kindly remember that.
Isn't a patient, is he, sir?
Do not let me find you here again.
Didn't know you were here, sir. We'll be off now.
No, no, Will. Mr. Treves was precisely saying no one would intrude when you intruded.
Oh, he's warned now. Merrick doesn't like it.
He was warned before. On what penalty, Will?
That you sack me, sir.
You are sacked, Will. You, his friend. You work here?
Just started last week, sir.
Well, I hope the point is taken now.
Mr. Gomer. I ain't truly sacked, am I?
Yes, Will, truly sacked. You will never be more truly sacked.
It's not me. Me wife ain't Will. Me sister's got to take care of our kids and of her.
Well, think of them first next time.
Well, it's only if I interfered with his medicine.
That is exactly what it is. You may go.
Yeah. Just keeping him to look at in private. That's all, isn't it? Oh, come on, you.
There are priorities, Frederick. The first is discipline. Smooth is the passage to the tight ship's master. Mr. Merrick, you're safe from prying now.
Have we nothing to say, John?
If all that had stared at me been sacked, there'd be whole towns out of work.
I meant, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
We always do say please and thank you, don't we?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
If we want to properly be like others...
Yes, sir. I want to.
Then it is for our own good, is it not?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Gold.
Sir, you're welcome.
You are happy here, are you not, John?
Yes.
The baths have rid you of the odour, have they not?
First chance I had to bathe regularly.
And three meals a day delivered to your room.
Yes, sir.
This is your promised land, is it not? A roof, food, protection, care, is it not?
Right, Mr. Treves.
Now, I will bet you don't know what to call this.
No. Sir, I don't know.
You call it home.
Never had a home before.
You have one now. Say it, John. Home.
Home.
No, really say it. I have a home. This is my... Go on.
I have... A home. This is my home. This is my home. I have a home. As long as I like.
That is what home is.
That is what is home.
If I abide by the rules, I will be happy.
Yes, sir.
Don't be shy.
If I abide by the rules, I will be happy.
Very good. Now why?
Why? What?
Will you be happy?
Because it is my home.
No. Why do rules make you happy?
I don't know.
Of course you do.
No, I really don't.
Why does anything make you happy?
Like what?
Don't be upset. Rules make us happy because
They are for our own good.
All right.
Don't be shy, John. You can say it.
This is my home.
No. About rules making us happy.
They make us happy because they are for our own good.
Excellent. Now, I am submitting a follow-up paper on you to the London Pathological Society. It would help if you told me what you recall about your first years, John, to fill in gaps.
To fill in gaps?
Yeah.
The workhouse where they put me, they beat you there like a drum. Boom, boom. Scrape the floor white. Shine the pan. Boom, boom. It never ends. The floor is always dirty. The pan is always tarnished. There's nothing you can do about it. You are always attacked anyway. Boom, boom, boom. Will the children go to the workhouse?
What? Children.
The children. The man, he's sacked.
Of necessity, will find other employment. You don't want crowds staring at you, now, do you?
No.
In your own home, you do not have to have crowds staring at you. Or anyone. Do you? In your home?
No.
Then Mr. Gom was merciful. But you yourself are proof. Is it not so? Well, is it not so?
If your mercy is so cruel, what do you have for justice?
I'm sorry. It's just the way things are.
Boom, 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 boom.
You have seen photographs of John Merrick, Mrs. Kendall. You are acquainted with his appearance.
He reminds me of an audience I played Cleopatra for once in Brighton. All huge, grim head and grimace, and utterly unable to clap.
Well, my aim is to lead him to as normal a life as possible. His terror of us all comes from having been held at arm's length from society. Now, I am determined that shall end. For example, he loves to meet people and converse. I am determined he shall. For example, he's never seen me inside of any normal home before. I had him to mine, and what a reward, Mrs. Kendall. His astonishment, his joy at the most ordinary things. Most critical, I feel, however, are women.
Mm-hmm.
I would explain. They have always shown the greatest fear and loathing of him, while he adores them, of course.
Ah, he is intelligent.
I am convinced that they are the key to retrieving him from his exclusion. Though I must warn you, women are not quite real to him, more creatures of his imagination.
Then he is already like other men, Mr. Treves.
So, I thought an actress could help. I mean, unlike most women, you won't give in. You are trained to hide your true feelings and assume others.
You mean, unlike most women, I am famous for it. That's really all.
Well, in any case, if you could enter the room and smile and wish him good morning, and when you leave, shake his hand, the left one is usable and really quite beautiful, and say, I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance, Mr. Merrick.
Shall we try it? Left hand out, please.
Oh.
I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance, Mr. Merrick. I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance, Mr. Merrick. I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance, Mr. Merrick. I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance, Mr. Merrick. Yes, that one.
My God, they're all splendid. Merrick will be so pleased. It will be the day he becomes a man like other men.
Speaking of that, Mr. Treves...
Frederick, please.
Freddy, may I commit an indiscretion?
Yes.
I could not but help noticing from the photographs that, of the unafflicted parts... Oh, how shall I put it?
Oh, I see. I quite understand. No, it is quite normal.
I thought as much.
Medically speaking, you see, the papillomatous extrusions which disfigure him seem to correspond quite regularly to the osseous deformities. That is... excuse me. There is a link between the bone disorder and the skin growths, though for the life of me I've not discovered what it is or why it is, but in any case this part would be therefore unlikely to be afflicted because, well, that is, well, there's no bone in it. None at all, I mean.
Well, learn a little every day, don't we?
I'm horribly embarrassed.
Are you? And he must be lonely indeed.
He's making sketches for a model of St. Philip's Church. He can see it from his window. He wants someday to make a model of it, you see.
Oh.
Now, John, my boy, this is Mrs. Kendall. She would very much like to make your acquaintance.
Good morning, Mr. Merrick.
I will see to a few matters. I will be back soon.
I planned so many things to say. I forget them. You are so beautiful.
How charming, Mr. Merrick.
Well, really, that was what I planned to say. That I forgot what I planned to say. I couldn't think of anything else. I was so excited.
Real charm is always planned, don't you think? Shall we sit?
Oh, please. Well, I do not know why I look like this, Mrs. Campbell. My mother was so beautiful. She was knocked down by an elephant in a circus while she was pregnant. Something must have happened, don't you think?
It may well have.
It may well have. But sometimes I think... my head is so big because it is so full of dreams. Because it is. Do you know what happens when dreams cannot get out?
Why, no.
I don't either. Something must... well, you are a famous actress.
I am not unknown.
You must display yourself for your living, then, like I did.
That is not myself, Mr. Merrick. That is an illusion. This is myself.
This is myself, too.
Frederick says you like to read. So, books.
I am reading Romeo and Juliet now.
Ah, Juliet. What a love story. I adore love stories.
I like love stories best, too. If I had been Romeo, guess what?
What?
I would not have held the mirror... to her breath?
You mean the scene where Juliet appears to be dead and he holds the mirror to her breath and sees...
nothing? How does it feel when he kills himself because he sees nothing?
Well, my experience as Juliet has been, particularly with an actor I will not name, that while I am laying there dead, 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 and he is lamenting excessively, I get to thinking that if this slab of ham does not part from the ham hock of his life toot-sweet... I'm going to scream. pop off the tomb and plunge a dagger into his fiend-stealing heart. Romeo's are very undefendable.
Because he does not care for Juliet.
Not care?
Does he take her pulse? Does he get a doctor? Does he make sure? No, he kills himself. The illusion fools him because he does not care for her. He only cares about himself. If I had been Romeo, we would have got away.
But then there would be no play, Mr. Merrick.
If he did not love her, why should there be a play? Looking in a mirror and seeing nothing, that is not love. It was all an illusion. When the illusion ended, he had to kill himself.
Why? That is extraordinary.
Before I spoke with people, I did not think of all these things. Because there was no one to bother to think them for. Now things just come out of my mouth, which are true.
Excuse me, John, your papers. We're in the papers. Look, they've written up my report to the Pathological Society. Look, it's a kind of apotheosis for you.
Frederick, I feel Mr. Merrick would benefit by even more company than you provide. In fact, by being acquainted with the best, and they with him. I shall make it my task, if you'll permit. As you know, I am a friend of nearly everyone, and I do pretty well what I please, and what pleases me is this task, I think.
By God, Mrs. Kendall, you are splendid.
Mr. Merrick, I must go now. I should like to return, if I may. And so that we may, without delay, teach you about society, I would like to bring my good friend, Dorothy Lady Neville. She would be most pleased if she could meet you. Let me tell her yes.
Indeed. Yes?
Then until next time. I'm sure your church model will surprise us all. Mr. Merrick, it has been a very great pleasure to make your acquaintance.
John, your hand. Mrs. Kendall wishes to shake your hand.
Thank you for coming.
But it was my pleasure. Thank you.
What a wonderful success. Do you know he's never shook a woman's hand?
Your Grace.
Mr. Merrick, how nicely the model of the church is coming along.
Thank you.
I've come to say Happy Christmas, and that I hope you will enjoy this ring and remember your friend by it.
Your Grace, thank you.
I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance.
Please accept these silverback brushes and comb for Christmas, Mr. Merrick.
With many thanks, Countess.
I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance.
Here's the silver-topped walkmanstick, Merrick. Make you a regular Piccadilly exquisite. Keep up the good work. Self-help is the best help. Example to us all.
Thank you, Lord John.
Very pleased to have made your acquaintance.
Her Royal Highness, Princess Alexandra.
The happiest of Christmases to you, Mr. Merrick.
Her Royal Highness has brought you a signed photograph of herself.
I am honored, Your Royal Highness. It is the treasure of my possessions. I have written to His Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales, to thank him for the pheasants and woodcock he sent.
You're a credit to Mr. Treves, Mr. Merrick. Mr. Treves, you are a credit to medicine, to Britain, and to Christendom. Mr. Merrick, I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance.
news, John. Bertie says we may use the Royal Box at Drury Lane whenever I like. Mrs. Keppel says it gives a unique perspective. And for Christmas, ivory-handled razors and toothbrushes.
And a cigarette case, my boy. Full of cigarettes.
Thank you very much.
Look, Freddy. Look. The model of St. Philip's.
It is remarkable, I know.
And I do it with just one hand, they all say.
You are an artist, John Merrick. An artist.
I did not begin to build at first. Not till I saw what St. Philip's really was. It is not stone and steel and glass. It is an imitation of grace flying up and up from the mud. So I make my imitation of an imitation. But even in that is heaven to me, Mrs. Kendall.
That thought's got a good line, John. Plato believed this was all a world of illusion, and that artists made illusions of heaven.
You mean we are all just copies of originals?
That's it.
Who made the copies?
God, the demiurge.
He should have used both hands, shouldn't he?
Why all those toilet articles, tell me? The brushes, the razors. He's much too deformed to use any of them.
Props, of course. To make himself. As I make me.
You? You think of yourself?
Well, he's gentle, almost feminine. Cheerful, honest within limits. A serious artist in his way. He is almost like me.
He is religious and devout. He knows salvation must radiate to us, or all is lost, which it is certainly not.
He seems practical, like me. He's seen enough of daily evil to be thankful for small goods that come his way. He knows what side his bread is buttered on, and he counts his blessings for it. Like me.
I can speak with him of anything, for I know he is discreet. Like me.
How odd. I think him curious, compassionate, concerned about the world. Well, rather like myself. Freddy Treves, 1889 A.D.
Of course, he is rather odd. And hurt. And helpless not to show the struggling. And so am I.
He knows I use him to raise money for the hospital, I'm certain. He understands I would be in dereliction of my duty if I didn't. He is wary of any promise, yet he fits in well. Like me.
I, as a seminarist, had many of the same doubts, struggled as he does, and hope they may be overcome.
When my husband, His Royal Highness Edward, Prince of Wales, asked Mr. Treves to be his personal surgeon, he said, "Dear Freddy, if you can put up with the elephant bloke, you can surely put up with me."
See him out of fashion, Freddy, as he sees me. Social contact's critical. Oh, by the way, ignore the bloody newspapers. All lies. Merrick, visibly worse than 1886-87. That as he rises high in the consolations of society, he gets visibly more grotesque, is proof definitive he is like me. Like his condition, which I make no sense of. I make no sense of mine. But the papers are saying you broke the contract. They're saying you've lost the money.
Freddy, if I were such a scoundrel, how would I dare face investors like yourself? Broken contracts? I never consider them actual contracts. Just preliminary things. Get the old deal underway. An actual contract, something between gentlemen, and this attack on me shows they are no gentlemen.
But that's...
Now, I'm only here to say the company remains a terribly attractive proposition. Don't you think? To recapitalize. If you could spare another... Mr. Gom, How good to see you. Just remarking how splendidly Merrick thrives here, thanks to you and Freddy.
Lord John, allow me, I must take Frederick from you. Keep him at work. It's in his contract. Wouldn't want him breaking it. Sort of thing makes the world fly apart, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I...
Sorry to hear you're so pressed financially. Expect we'll see less of you around the London now.
Yes, of course. Actually, I'm overdue, actually. Appointment in the city. Freddy? Mr. Gone.
Well, he plain fooled me. He was kind to Merrick.
You've risen fast and easily, my boy. You've forgotten how to protect yourself. Break now.
It does not seem right,
sir. The man's a moral swamp. Is that not clear yet? Is he attractive? This seat often is. Friendly, swindlers can be. Another loan, not another cent. It may be your money, Freddy. But I will not tolerate labouring like a navvy that the London hospital should represent honest and charitable and compassionate science and have titled swindlers mucking up the pitch. He succeeded in destroying himself so rapidly you ought not to doubt an instant it was his real aim all along. He broke the contracts, gambled the money away, lied, and like an infant in his mess, gurgles and wants to do it again.
Never
mind details,
well.
I don't want to know. Break and be glad. Don't hesitate today. One man moral swap. Don't be sucked in.
Have you seen the paper?
Yes. Great pity. Ready? Today.
Freddy?
Lord John has used us. I shall be all right. Come, let me take you in. John, I shall not be able to stay this visit. I must, well, unravel a few things. Nurse Ireland and Snork are
friendly and respectful, Freddy.
Yeah, I'll look in a few days.
Did I do something wrong?
No, John.
This is a hospital, not a marketplace. Don't forget it ever. Sorry, not you. Me.
Well, shall we weave today? Don't you think weaving might be fun? So many things are fun. Most men really can't enjoy them. They are lost, isn't it? I like little activities which engage me. There's something ancient in it, I don't know, before all this. Would you like to try, John?
Frederick said I may stay here for life.
And so you shall.
If he is in trouble...
Frederick is your protector, John.
If he is in trouble...
Who is that in the photograph? Is it not your mother? She is pretty, isn't she?
Will Frederick keep his word with me? His contract, Mrs. Kendall? If he is in... trouble.
What? Contract, did you say?
And will you?
I? What? Will I?
The prince has a mistress. The Irishman had one. Everyone seems to. Or a wife. Some have both. I have concluded I need a mistress. It is bad enough not to sleep like others.
Sitting up, you mean? Couldn't be very restful.
I have to. Too heavy to lay down my head. Can't breathe. But to sleep alone, that is the worst of all.
The artist expresses his love through his works. That is civilization.
Are you very shocked?
Why should I be?
Others would be.
I am not others.
I suppose it is hopeless.
Nothing is hopeless. However, it is unlikely.
I thought you might have a few ideas.
I can guess who has ideas here.
You don't know something. I have never even seen a naked woman.
Surely in all the fairs you were.
I mean, a real woman.
Is one more real than another?
I mean, like the ones in the theatre.
Surely you can't mean they're more real.
in the audience. A woman not worn out early, not deformed by awful life. A lady. Someone kept up, respectful of herself. You don't know what fairgrounds are like, Mrs. Kendall.
You mean someone like Princess Alexandra?
Not so old.
Like Dorothy.
She does not look happy. No.
Lady Ellen.
Too thin.
Well, then who?
Certain women, they have a kind of ripeness. They seem to stop at a perfect point.
My dear, she doesn't exist.
That is probably why I never saw her.
What would your friend Bishop Howe say of all this, I wonder?
He says I should put these things out of my mind.
Is that the best he can suggest?
I put them out of my mind. They reappeared. Snap.
What about Frederick?
He would be appalled if I told him.
I am flattered. Too little trust has maimed my life. But that is another story.
What a rain. Are we going to read this afternoon?
Yes. Some women are lucky to look well, that is all. It is a rather arbitrary gift. It has no really good use, though it has uses, I will say that. Anyway, it does not signify very much.
To me, it does.
Well, you are mistaken.
What are we going to read?
Trust is very important, you know. I trust you.
And you very much. I have a book of Thomas Hardy's here. He is a friend of Frederick's. Shall we read that?
Turn around a moment. Don't look.
Is this a game?
I would not call it a game. A surprise.
What kind of a surprise?
I saw photographs of you before I met you. You didn't know that, did you?
The ones from the first time in 1884? No, I didn't.
I felt it was unjust. I don't know why. I cannot say my sense of justice is my most highly developed characteristic. You may turn round again. Well, a little funny, isn't it?
It is the most beautiful sight I have seen ever.
If you tell anyone, I shall not see you again. We shall not read. We shall not talk. We shall do nothing. Oh, wait. I shall undo my hair, too. There. No illusions now. Well, what is there to say? I am extremely pleased to have made your acquaintance.
For God's sake. What is going on here? What is going on?
For a moment. Paradise, Freddy.
But have you no sense of decency? Woman, dress yourself quickly. Are you not ashamed? Do you know what you are? Don't you know what is forbidden?
Ask your forgiveness, John.
I found a good home, Ross. I forgave you.
I was hoping we could work out a deal, something new, maybe.
No.
You see, I was counting on it, that you were kind-hearted, like myself. Some things don't change. You've got to put your money on the things that don't, I figure. I figure from what I read about you, you don't change. Dukes, ladies coming to see you. I ask myself, why? Figure it's the same as always was. Makes them feel good about themselves by comparison. Them things don't change, John. They're but for the grace of. So I figure you're selling the same service as always to better clientele. Difference now is you ain't charging for it.
You make me sound like a whore.
You are. I am. They are. Most are. No disgrace, John. Disgrace is to be a stupid whore. Give it for free. Not capitalise on the interest in you. Not to have a manager then is stupid.
You see this model? It's St. Philip's Church. I am building it. The people who visit are friends, not clients. I am not a dog walking on its hind legs.
I was thinking, charge these people. Pleasure of the Elephant Man's company. Do it in the right spirit. They pay happily. I take 10%. I'd be all right with 10%.
Bad luck's made you daft.
I helped you, John. Discovered you. Was that daft? No. Only darkness was being at a gold mine without a shovel, without proper connections, like Treves has. Rosso's Treves Harvests. It's not fair, is it, John? When you think about it. I do think about it, because I'm old. I've got something in my throat, you may have noticed. Something in my lung here, too. Something in my belly, I guess, too. I'm not a bundle of health, am I? But I do well with 10%. I don't need more than 10%. 10% to give me a future slightly better than a cobblestone. This lot would pay if you're charged in the right spirit. I don't ask much.
They're the cream, Ross. They know it. Man like you tries to make them pay, they'll walk away.
I'm talking about doing it in the right spirit.
They are my friends. I'd lose everything for you. Ross, you lived your life. You robbed me of £48, 2 shillings and 9 pence. You left me to die. Be satisfied, Ross. You've had enough. You kept me like an animal in darkness. You come back and want to rob me again? Will you not be satisfied? Now, I am a man like others. You want me to return?
And a woman yet?
Is that what makes a man?
In my time, it'll do for a start.
Not what makes this one. Yet, I am like others.
Then I'm condemned. I've got no energy to try nothing new. I might as well go to the Doss House straight. Die there anyway. Between filthy Doss House rags. Nothing in the belly but acid. I don't know that pain, John. The future gives pain sense. Without a future. 5%, John.
I'm sorry, Ross. It's
just the way things are.
By God. Then I am lost.
Frederick.
Hmm?
Do you believe in heaven? Hell? Hmm? What about Christ? What about God? I believe in heaven. The Bible promises in heaven the crooked shall be made straight.
So did the rack, my boy. So do we all.
You don't believe?
I will settle for a reliable general anesthetic at this point. Actually, though, I had a patient once. A woman. Operated on her for, a woman's thing. Used ether to anesthetize. Tricky stuff. Didn't come out of it. Pulse stopped, no vital signs, absolutely moribund. Just a big white dead mackerel. 5 minutes later, she fretted back to existence, like a lost explorer with a great scoop of the undiscovered.
She saw heaven.
Well, I quote her, it was neither heavenly nor hellish, rather like perambulating in a London fog. People drifted by, but no one spoke. It was London, mind you. Hell's probably the provinces. She was shocked it wasn't more exotic. But loud as how, had she stayed and got used to the familiar, so to speak, it did have hints of becoming a kind of bliss, and she fled.
If you do not believe, why did you send Mrs. Kendall away?
Don't forget, it saved you once, my interference. But you know well enough it was not proper.
How can you tell if you do not believe?
But there are still standards we abide by.
They make us happy because they are for our own good.
Well, not always.
Oh.
Look, if you're angry, just say so.
Whose standards are they?
I'm not in the mood for this chipping away at the edges, John.
That do not always make us happy because they are not always for our own good.
Well, everyone's. Well, mine. Everyone's.
That woman's. That Juliet.
Juliet?
Who died, then came back like Shakespeare's play.
Oh, I see. Yes, her standards too.
So?
So what?
Did you see her naked?
Well, when I was operating, of course.
Oh.
Oh, what?
It's all right to see them naked if you cut them up afterwards. Oh,
good Lord, I'm a surgeon. That is science.
She died. Mrs. Kendall didn't.
Well, she came back too.
And Mrs. Kendall didn't. If you mean that.
Well, I'm trying to read about anesthetics. There's simply no comparison.
Oh.
Science is a different thing. I mean, this woman came to me to be. I mean, it's not, well, love, you know?
Is that why you're looking for an anesthetic?
It would be a boon to surgery.
Because you don't love them?
Love has got nothing to do with surgery.
Do you lose many patients?
I, well, some.
Oh.
Oh, what? What does it matter? But don't you see, if I love, if any surgeon loves her, or any patient or not, and what does it matter? And what conceivable difference to you?
Because it's your standards we abide by.
Oh, for God's sakes. If you are angry, just say it. I won't turn you out, just say it. I am angry. Go on. I am angry, I am angry, I am angry.
I believe in heaven.
And it is not all right if they undress, if you cut them up. As you put it, make me sound like Jack the Ripper.
No. You worry about anesthetics.
Are you having me on?
You are merciful. I myself am proof. Is it not so? Well, is it not so?
Well, I... About Mrs. Kendall, perhaps I was wrong. I, these days, that is, I seem to lose my head. Taking too much on, perhaps. I do not know what is in me these days.
Will she come back, Mrs. Kendall?
I will talk to her again.
But will she?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
But there are other things involved. Very... That is, other things.
Other things.
I want to walk now. Think. Other things. Why?
Why won't she?
Because I don't want her here when you die. When you die. When you die.
If he is merely happy and mashy and paint, a swindler and a
saint. I don't know a genuine Joseph Weaver in a moral struggle. Look, he has so forgot how to protect himself. He's gone to sleep.
I must examine him. I would not keep him for long, Mr. Gong.
It will be an inconvenience, Mr. Merrick. He's a mainstay of our institution.
Exactly that brought him to my attention. I am Merrick. Here is my card. I am with the mutations across the road.
Frederick, stand up. You must understand he is very, very valuable. We have invested a great deal in him. He is personal surgeon to the Prince of Wales.
But I only wish to examine him. I had not, of course, dreamed of changing him.
But he's a gentleman and a good man.
Therefore, exemplary for study, as a cruel or deviant one would not be.
Oh, very well. Have him back to breakfast time or you'll feed him. Philip, stand up, you bloody dog, get up!
The most striking feature about him, Yank, is the terrifyingly normal effect. This allowed him to lie down normally and therefore to dream in the exclusive personal manner without the weight of others' dreams accumulating to break his neck. From the brow projected a normal vision of benevolent enlightenment, what we believe to be a kind of self-mesmerized state. The mouth, deformed by satisfaction at being at the hub of the best of existent worlds, was rendered therefore utterly incapable of self-critical speech, thus of the ability to change. The heart showed signs of worry at this unchanging yet untenable state. The back was horribly stiff from being kept against a wall to face the discontent of a world ordered for his convenience. The surgeon's hands were well developed and strong, capable of the most delicate carvings up for others' own good. Due also to the normal head, the right arm was of enormous power, but so incapable of the distinction between the assertion of authority and the charitable act of giving that it was often to be found disgustingly beating others for their own good. The left arm was slightly brighter and fairer, and may be seen in typical position, hand covering the genitals, which were treated as a sullen colony, in constant need of restriction, governance, punishment, for their own good. To add a further burden to his trouble, the wretched man, when a boy, developed a disabling spiritual duality, therefore was unable to feel what others feel, nor reach harmony with them. He would thus be denied all means of escape from those he had tormented.
Mary, you have shown a profound and unknown disorder to us here. You have said when he leaves here, it is for his prior life again. I do not think it ought to be permitted. It is a disgrace. It is a pity and a disgrace. It is an indecency. It may be a danger in ways we do not know. Something ought to be done about it.
We hope in 20 years you will understand enough to put an end to his affliction.
20 years, sir. That is unacceptable.
Had we caught it early, it might have been different, but his condition has already spread both east and west. The truth is, I am afraid, we are dealing with an epidemic. An epidemic. An epidemic.
Oh.
Behold, there came a leper.
Still beavering away for Christ?
Yes.
I read your report. He doesn't know, does he?
The bishop?
I meant Merrick.
No.
I shall be sorry when he dies.
It will not be unexpected, anyway.
He's brought the hospital quite a lot of good repute. Quite a lot of contributions, too, for that matter. In fact, I like him. Never regretted letting him stay on. Though I didn't imagine he'd last this long.
His heart won't sustain him much longer. May even give out when he gets off his bloody knees with that bloody man.
What is it, Freddy? What has gone sour for you?
Oh, it's just the overarc of things, quite inescapable, that as he's achieved greater and greater normality, his conditions edged him closer to the grave. So, a parable of growing up, to become more normal is to die, more accepted, to worsen. He died as just a mockery of everything we live by.
Sorry, Freddy, didn't catch that one.
Nothing has gone sour. I do not know.
Cheer up, man. You're knighted. Your clients will be kings. Nothing succeeds, my boy, like success.
Goodbye, John. I shall see you again very soon. Goodbye.
I find my sessions with him utterly moving, Mr. Treves. He struggles so. I suggested he might like to be confirmed, and he leapt at it like a man lost in a desert to an oasis.
He's very excited to do what others do, if he thinks it is what others do.
Do you cast doubts, sir, on his faith?
No, sir, I do not. Yes, he makes all of us think he is deeply like ourselves, and yet we are not like each other. I conclude that we have polished him like a mirror and shout hallelujah when he reflects us to the inch. I've grown sorry for it.
I do not understand what you are saying, Mr. Treves. Is something troubling you?
Corsets. How about corsets? Here's a pamphlet I've written due mostly to the grotesque ailments I've seen caused by corsets. Fashion overrules me, of course. My patients do not unstrap themselves of corsets, for some cannot, you know. I have so little time in the week. I spend Sundays in the poor wards to keep up with work. Work being 20-year-old women who look an abused 50 with worn-outedness, young men with appalling industrial conditions I turn out as soon as is possible to return to their labours. But happily, most of my patients are not poor. They are middle class. They overeat and drink so grossly. They destroy nature in themselves and all around them so fervidly. They will not last. Higher up, sir, above this middle class, I confront these same deformities, bulged out by unlimited resources and the ruthlessness of privilege into the most scandalous dissipation, yoked to the grossest ignorance and constraint. I counsel against it where I can. I am ignored, of course. Well, then what, sir, could be troubling me? I am an extremely successful Englishman in a successful and respected England, which informs me daily, by the way it lives, that it wants to die. I am in despair, in fact. Science, observation, practice, deduction, having led me to these conclusions, can no longer serve as consolation. I apparently see things others don't.
I do wish I understood you better, sir. But as for consolation, there is in Christ's church consolation.
I am sure we were not born for mere consolation.
But look at Mr. Merrick's happy example.
Oh, yes, you'd like my garden too. My dog, my wife, my daughter. Pruned, cropped, pollarded, and somewhat stupefied. Very happy examples, all of them. Well, is it all we know how to finally do with, whatever, nature? Is it? Rob it? No. Nature, really. I mean, ourselves, really. Myself, really. Robbed, that is. You do see, of course, can't figure out, really, what else to do with them, can we?
It is not exactly clear, sir.
I have an awfully good gardener. Is that clear? By God, I take such good care of anything, you, we are convinced. Are you not convinced? Him, I mean, is not very dangerously human. I mean, how could he be after what we've given him? What you like, sir, is that he is so grateful for patrons, so greedy to be patronized, and no demands, no rights, no hopes. Past perverted, present false, future nil. What better could you ask? He puts up with all of it. Of course, I do mean taken when I say given, as in what we have given him. But you knew that, I'll bet, because
I...
Do you mean charity? I cannot tell what you are saying.
Help me! Help me!
My dear sir. After all, Mr. Merrick, still building that model of yours, eh?
It is finished.
Oh.
It is done.
Very nice it is too, sir. Now, lunch, Mr. Merrick. I'll set it up. Maybe you'd like a walk after lunch. April's doing wonders for the gardens. My mate, Will. Do you remember him, sir? His sister died yesterday. 28 she was, imagine that. Wife was sick, the sister nursed her. Was a real bloom, that girl. Now, wife all right, sister just ups and dies. It's also, what's the word, I forgot it. It means chancy. Well, I forgot it. Chancy will do. Have a nice lunch.
Chancy. So... must rest. Chance?
But it's arbitrary. Arbitrary. It's also up.
Oh. Hey.
Hey. The elephant man. He's dead.
To the editor of the Times. Sir, in November 1886, you were kind enough to insert in the Times a letter from me drawing attention to the case of Joseph Merrick.
John.
Hmm?
John Merrick.
Well, known as the Elephant Man. It was one of singular and exceptional misfortune, etc., etc., debarred from earning his livelihood in any other way than being exhibited to the gaze of the curious, this having been rightly interfered with by the police, etc., etc. With great difficulty, he succeeded somehow or other in getting to the door of the London Hospital, where, through the kindness of one of our surgeons, he was sheltered for a time. And then, while deterred by common humanity from evicting him again into the open street, I wrote to you, and from that moment all difficulty vanished. The sympathy of many was aroused, and although no other fitting refuge was offered, a sufficient sum was placed at my disposal, apart from the funds of the hospital, to maintain him for what did not promise to be a prolonged life.
I forgot. The coroner said it was death by asphyxiation, because he lay down to sleep. The weight of his head crushed the windpipe.
Well, I go on to say about how he spent his time here, that all attempted to alleviate his misery, that he was visited by the highest in the land, etc., etc. In general, he joined our lives as best he could. And in spite of all this indulgence, he was quiet and unassuming, grateful for all that was done for him, and conformed readily to the restrictions which were necessary. Will that do so far, do you think?
I should think it would.
Wouldn't add anything else, would you?
Well... he was highly intelligent, he had an acute sensibility, and worst for him, a romantic imagination. No, never mind. I'm not really certain of any of it.
I've given these details, thinking that those who sent money to use for his support would like to know how their charity was used. Last Friday afternoon, though apparently in his usual health, he quietly passed away in his sleep. I have left in my hands a small balance of the money for his support, and this I now propose, after paying certain gratuities, to hand over to the general funds of the hospital. This course, I believe, will be consonant with the wishes of the contributors. It was the courtesy of the Times in inserting my letter in 1886 that procured for this afflicted man a comfortable protection during the last years of a previously wretched existence, and I desire to take this opportunity of thankfully acknowledging it. I am, sir, your obedient servant, F. C. Carr Gong. House Committee Room, London Hospital, 15th April, 1890.
I did think of one small thing.
It's too late, I'm afraid. It is done.
In The Elephant Man by Bernard Pomerance, Gerard Murphy was John Merrick, Jeremy Clyde, Frederick Treves, Anna Massey, Mrs. Kendall, and Charles Kay, Carr Gom. John Hollis was Ross, John Baddeley, Bishop Howe, and Philip Sully, Lord John. Jennifer Piercy was Princess Alexandra, Joan Walker, the Countess, Diana Olsen, the Duchess, and Michael Tudor Barnes, the Porter. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Technical presentation was by Graham Harper. The musical director was Colin Sell. This was a BBC World Service drama production directed by David Hitchinson.